What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 72 of Value Town. I'm Chanman V, and today we've got a couple of guests joining me and Noxious today. Ray's out today, guys, so don't worry. He's still part of the show. He'll be back next week. But we've got Orange and Jackie Chan joining us. Orange, of course, has been on the show before, so welcome back, buddy.
What's up?
What's up? All right. And then Jackie, of course, this is his first time on the show. Really excited to have you. We've been talking about you on like previous episodes, so this is really cool to finally have you on. Welcome.
Great.
All right.
Keep having me.
So what's everybody been up to? We usually start the show with just seeing how everybody's, you know, what everybody's been, I guess, doing in Hearthstone, whether it's, you know, playing some events or just goofing off. Noxious, what you been up to?
Game-wise, not too much. I mean, I've been trying out some Wild. Yesterday was actually a little bit of fun. A lot more fun than Standard for some weird reason. I think people are now moving to Wild to play, you know, funny decks, at least. And it seems to be a little bit less on the competitive side since there's not much net decking going on. As far as Hearthstone, I guess a lot of casting with the recent DreamHack we've had.
Yeah, DreamHack and what, Star Ladder a little bit too.
Yeah, dude, it's pretty cool. There's a lot of really good events going on.
Yeah, you've been busy, man.
But yeah, we'll talk a bit about the formats and everything a little bit later. But yeah, there's a lot of discussion about exactly the tournament scene right now.
Yeah, totally. Orange, how about you? You've been playing in a lot of events?
I've been playing in DreamHack Austin, and I also played in Star Ladder yesterday. Mm-hmm. Other than that, and I've been preparing for, I'm going to China tomorrow. So not only have I been like yelling at Chinese people to try to get a visa, but been like actually looking like a little bit into the Asian scene and see what they play over there.
Yeah,
that's what I've been doing lately.
There's actually quite a few people going to that one, so that's the big next big one everybody's headed towards. Very, very cool. Jackie, how about you? What you been up to?
Well, at the weekend I was at the spring prelims. Great fun. Unfortunately, lost at Ostrava, but
that
really
bastard.
Good experience. And, like, I haven't had that much tournament experience, so it's really great to be able to be on the stream as well.
Yeah, exactly. People, I mean, you stream too, but I guess a lot of people know most people know you from the names, like on Reddit and just all those cool decks that you've come up with through time. So yeah, definitely good to get some face time and on here too. So this is what he looks like, guys. This is what he actually looks like.
I've known Jackie for like a pretty long time since he like crushed me back in the day with Egg Druid on Ladder. It's like after like I have so many people since preliminaries just like come in and be like, hey, can you please play Yakis decks? Like, like that guy played really fucking cool decks. Can you also be as cool as him, Orange? They're like, whoa.
Can you be as cool as him?
Yeah, I'm like, no, I'm sorry.
Well, anyways, it was really great to have you guys on. We're going to be going through, actually, we're going to talk about Tavern Brawl, just the last week's Tavern Brawl, and maybe just touch on this week's. This one's a repeat, actually, this week. So we'll talk about the prelims and Star Ladder. We've already touched a little bit on it, but we'll get into a little bit more in depth on it. Talk about this card crafting guide. It's really about just a legendary, and it's one of these guides that prioritizes which legend. We always get asked which legend to craft first, and I figured we'd have a discussion because we've never done that on the show before. And then deck teching, like we always do, we got some fun decks. It's a bestial feral day since we're just gonna be talking about Hunter and Druids today. And of course we've got Q&A with you guys at the end. Please tweet your questions to at ChamMV or at ValueTownGG, and we'll try to read as many as we can out at the end of the show. Okay, so Tavern Brawl. Last week's Tavern Brawl, or the one that ended, was the one with the two cards. And we touched very, very briefly on it last episode. But I ended up playing a bunch of it, so I kind of wanted to see if you guys ended up playing any of it and really, really seeing, you know, after, you know, a full weeks of it, which combo of two cards you thought was really, really good. So, I don't know, Jackie, Orange, you guys play any Tavern Brawl? I know you guys are such tryhards, so maybe Tavern Brawl is not your thing, but...
I was loving the Tavern Brawl, actually. Cool. My favorite deck from the Tavern Brawl was Target Dummy and Bolster.
What? Target Dummy and Bolster?
Yeah. If you have a coin, you can just chuck a load of Target Dummies down, turn one, bolster them all, and
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it keeps chaining and you just never stop and no one's got answers to them. And it's one of the few decks that actually answers Doomsayers if you get on the board first.
That's what I was doing.
Oh, that's like,
it works. It actually works.
Oh, nice. It's a little bit faster than the whole Mech Warper thing too, right? That was like the big strategy everybody was doing for a while.
I don't know. I don't know if it's faster. But
well, I mean, it gets on the board faster, but then like one turn, all like seven Mech Warpers come out or something, whatever version of it that you have. Okay, yeah. I was doing the Doomsayer plus whatever damage or damage plus cycle type of thing. Orange, how about you? Play any Tavern Brawl?
I played one game. To be fair, I haven't played Tavern Brawl for months. So me actually playing one game on Tavern Brawl.
Okay.
I played the Mech Warper Metal 2 Fleeper when like the Tavern Brawl was brand new. And I was like, yeah, this is pretty stupid. But I followed discussions on Twitter and actually saw, and I was just like pretty intrigued by seeing how the meta game developed.
So yeah.
It was like kind of rock, paper, scissors meta. And while I may not have played a lot of it, I really enjoyed following that little mini meta developed.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of fun. Noxious, how about you? I'm sure you came with some crazy stuff, so let me hear it, man.
Crazy stuff. I mean, I tried a lot of really nice ideas on paper. My first, the first thing I actually did was Doomsayer with Resurrect, because I was like, people are probably going to try to rush me down, and I'm just going to like fatigue them to death. But as it turns out, when you run into Ice Block with Forgotten Torch, Doomsayer and Resurrect doesn't do very
much.
Yeah,
exactly.
So right. I end up going for other plans. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like. I think the most important part about the Tavern Brawl was that it gives new players a lot of ways to understand combos and interactions very, very clearly, and like counterplay as well, right? Because it's a very like small pocket of a quote unquote meta game, but you see two cards interact with each other, and then you think, okay, which other two cards would beat those? And that's a lot simpler to come up with than try to refine, a 30-card deck with perfect techs for a newer player. And it gives a little bit of insight maybe as to how to think about, metagame countering. And you tend to see that you can't counter everything with one deck. And once you learn that and you transition into real constructed, that's really helpful because suddenly you don't try to make your deck counter everything. You don't put like one MC tech, one BGH, one Black Knight, one like Blood Knight. You don't put all those cards, which a new player might try to do at first.
Exactly.
So that was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, that really great point. I mean, I think this was actually my favorite Tavern Brawl, mostly because I feel like you said, I feel like a lot of the players, casual, whether you're a beginner or advanced, could enjoy this pretty equally. Where, some Tavern Brawls, you have to build decks from your cards. So obviously a lot of people don't have all the cards. That's like half of them, right? And then half of them you do have preset decks, or there's some kind of way of playing. Everybody has the same cards basically. But this one was really cool because it was like you said, it was like a distilled, very simplified type of meta and card pool. And I think people get a chance to kind of, feel Hearthstone at a simpler level, but still from a gamesmanship, just game theory, it's very similar in a way. And right. I think for casual players, this is perfect. This is kind of a weird example, but it's analogous to like playing some hardcore AAA game, that's super in depth versus playing like Flappy Bird, right? and that sort of thing. I'm serious. And I think having a very simplified version just makes it more accessible for like everybody.
So you got like Super Meat Boy on one side, then you got Flappy Bird on the
other,
right?
Exactly. So
that's a hate on Flappy Bird.
It's the Flappy Bird version of Hearthstone, the two card combo. But,
okay.
I hope they do it more though. I think it was a lot of fun, and everybody that I know played it just really, really enjoyed it. So definitely a successful Tavern Brawl. This week's, though, is the Mechazod one. The Mechazod ones, we've actually had, maybe three or four times now. So once you kind of figure it out, it's kind of, it's easy, right? Unless I'm thinking about it wrong, I think that's correct, right? Just once you kind of have
it's easy if you have a player you know how to play with, right?
Yeah. Some people were asking if we were going to do like a show match. I'm like, there's no point of doing that like on Valuetown whenever we all know like what to do to actually solve the puzzle. So maybe next time.
No.
What?
I don't know.
Why?
No, Orange is like, I have absolutely
no clue what to do.
Oh, that's true. You've never actually done it. Oh, man. That actually might be fun. Jackie, you've done it before.
That would be sick.
Jackie, you've done it before, right?
Just watch me look there and be like, I look so fucking stupid now and everybody knows what to do.
All right, we might have to do one of them then at the end of this. Okay, because we're actually set up to run games and observe people, so we might have to do one at the end. We'll have to see. Definitely, guys, if you haven't played the Mechazod one, it's like the only co-op tavern brawl that we actually it's the only co-op anything that we have in Hearthstone, so definitely give that a try for sure.
Spectate Quest,
that's right. Spectate Quest, that's the good one.
Yo, you can do this. The guy's like solo playing anyway, but at least you're cheering for him. It's kind of co-op, right?
right Okay, next up, some events. Let's talk about the events that have been happening. Star Ladder, obviously happening right now, but Jackie was talking about being at the prelims this past weekend. You guys get a chance to check out a lot of the matches? Noxious, Orange, you guys watch?
I haven't had time. Nope. It's unfortunate. I've caught a few of them. But I'm just swarmed in, baby stuff. So
yeah,
I cast some events. I keep up on the metagame shifting here and there, the list that people come up with. But the matches themselves, like crazy plays and whatnot, not so much.
Yeah. Okay. Orange, how about you?
I actually went to the Swedish preliminary site in Stockholm and hung out with Oskar and Sho. Which was really cool. I got to follow their matches, stand behind both of them while they played. So I mostly watched them play. Actually, also, one of the best things about the prelims, one of it, Oskar actually was going up against Jackie. And he was like, this fucking guy has two Yogg decks. We all know what's gonna happen this much. I'm gonna get memed really hard. he was really scared facing you.
The best thing was the first Yogg-Saron I played was amazing. The first
it was.
Cleared his board, drew cards, called the wild. Amazing.
Dude,
seems good.
That deck, we'll be talking about that deck.
I knew this would happen.
But I guess maybe just tangent on Yogg-Saron, I feel like that's the second best old god behind Nazoth. Even though people value C'Thun a lot, I'd say Yogg-Saron is a lot better than C'Thun in many aspects. What do you think maybe about the that general statement from a gameplay perspective, Jackie?
I completely agree. I think on average, he's more likely to do something good for you than something bad.
Sure.
Sure. I mean, people have done the statistics.
When you've played a ton of spells, he can just go nuts. I completely agree. I think C'Thun is very you know what's going to happen every time.
Yeah.
It's boring, but...
Well, you can prep.
It might be effective.
You can prepare for C'Thun, right? Everybody has a way to remove C'Thun by the time he's played, so... You know, you're just trying to avoid dying from the C'Thun play, and then you just remove him. So Yogg is unpredictable, and from the standpoint,
yeah, exactly. One of the best things about Yogg is that he has the potential to get you out of any situation. Mm-hmm. You could be in any situation, and you could get an ice block or pyroblast to his face. The possibilities are just.
Hurt
about
your face.
Yeah. Or you can pyroblast your own.
If you're
face.
The one playing it, or you're your opponent, right? When it's you, you always die, but.
I actually think that Yogg-Saron is the hardest card to ever understand in all of Hearthstone. Mm-hmm. That card is really hard to grasp everything it does. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we're anywhere near close to realizing what you can do with that card. I think that so I was starting to play Yogg-Saron Druid, something not very similar to what Jackie played, but at least the same engine and stuff like that. And I just played it for fun. And the more I played that deck, it had summoning stones and shit in it, but it eventually cut that. The more I played it, I actually starting to realize that there's actually way more than this card than just a bunch of random effects. And it's the deck I'm having the most fun. And I feel I'm learning the most, actually working on that deck. Mm-hmm. And I think that Yogg-Saron will eventually, this is pretty bold claim, but I think that Yogg-Saron might be a very big contender in the meta as when people actually understand exactly what to do with that card.
I mean, right now, I feel like Yogg-Saron is a card that can pull out miracle victories for you. You know, I think it's one of those those things that you just keep in your back pocket, and you know, let's just say with the Hunter deck, right? It's generally pretty good from the standpoint of just dealing damage, tempo damage or whatnot, or just constantly dealing damage, and you can win a lot of times just without even Yogg. But Yogg can pull out those miracle victories. Is that kind of what you think, Orange? Like Yogg will continue to be, or you actually think Yogg will take even more of a importance in how a deck, you know, like how you win with a deck?
I think, like, so Yogg is not a reliable win condition. Right. That is one thing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But just as Yaki said, like, the key with Jogsaron is that it can take, like, if you're behind, it can bring you back from any sort of situation. Like, no matter what the pressure your opponent has on you, like, it can turn any game you're behind into, like, to an advantageous position for you. For example, I was streaming with the deck yesterday, and I had, like, as a title, like, Jogsaron Druid, because that brings a lot of viewers. And everyone was super excited to see me play Jogsaron, but most of the time, like, you just never play that card. Like,
yeah,
a lot of the time it just sits in your hand.
And that's why.
Yeah, exactly. Because if you're not playing the card, you're winning the game. And, like, you don't need it.
That's absolutely right.
And when you are behind, and, like, you get, like, this incredible Jogsaron off, which I think with enough spells, like, most of the time, it's going to turn out really good for you. It just swings games, and you get a bunch of free wins because you put this one card in your deck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to wonder, though, because, you know, there's some, let's say Warrior, right? Even though they play a lot of spells, it doesn't look like it, but they really do have a ton of cheap spells. The reason they don't need that card is because they already have a way to turn the game around. Whereas some classes, like Druid, for instance, they don't have this crazy board sweep, right? They don't have this, oh, wow, the board is full, what do I do? Mechanic in their class. And because of that, Yogg fits in there, just like Hunter. Hunter could possibly get it in the future, but right now there's no full board clear. And Yogg-Saron gives that to classes that don't have it. And that's, I think, where the power of the card lies. Mm-hmm. It's not so much a good card across the board as much as it is good in those pockets or those decks that have no option at some points in the game.
Yeah, it's more of a utility card. Like, those are great points. Like, clearing the board almost always happens. And then some type of card draw or defensive, you know, getting a bunch of secrets generally happens too. Rogue, it's been more. I think I've seen some decent Rogue ones too recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that the most important thing about Jogsaron is that you do not build your deck around Jogsaron. You're not building a Jogsaron deck. You're building a deck with an engine that is, like, very reliant on spells. And then because you play this engine, you can afford to put Jogsaron, which is a good card in that sort of deck.
Yeah.
So I think the mistake people are building it are, like, I'm gonna make the super super flashy old god work, when they in fact should just, like, build a good deck, and if the deck supports it, put in Jogsaron.
Yeah. Jackie, like, you brought two of them. Okay, so you brought two of them to the prelims. All right, how much of it was you wanting to basically, you know, make some spectacular moments happen versus just thinking that they literally are the best decks?
Well, this part of me always likes trying to do interesting things and fun things.
Right,
but,
right.
Generally, I think the Druid deck is actually very, very strong. I think... because, like, I used to play, like, Egg Druid, like High Ladder, and I like, considered it a really strong deck, but I didn't play in many tournaments, so I didn't get to, like... But now Token Druid is, like, it's, like, super slow. It's almost like a mid-range Druid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
First few turns, like, just clearing the board.
Right.
Board, and then if they clear your board, you just flood it again. Like, the Druid deck, I think, is actually very, very strong. It has the... capability to survive the aggression while it still has, like, Savage Roar.
I mean, we're talking about the deck so much. Why don't we just go straight to talking about the decks?
Because
it's kind of all right. So I'm gonna bring up the Druid one first, since we're talking about it. And each one of you guys have one, so we're gonna talk about them. All right, here we go.
Oh, and one thing that's really fun is that both of us have a Jog Druid that we worked I worked on my Jog Druid for a really long time, and I know that Jackie has worked on his, and they are wildly different.
Yeah, yeah.
They are running, like, very, very different cards, which And both of us think the deck is really strong, which means that we probably means that we're both like a little bit off, and that we both think the deck is good, and none of us have like found the. I don't think that we have found the best version yet of the deck.
Right.
Which is saying something about the deck.
Okay, so I have them listed up on the screen right now. So the one on the very left is Orange's, and the one in the middle here is Jackie's, and the one on the right here is Noxious's. Is this the wild one?
Noxious's.
No, is this the wild one?
Here's the thing. Yeah. The only wild card is Dark Whispers.
Yeah.
So as far as we're concerned, it doesn't have to be there.
Yeah.
But yes, it is like as far as the classification.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's got the Addled Grizzly too. I just want to mention that too, Noxious, because I mentioned that card like a while back.
And I was a naysayer, dude. I told you the card was garbage, and I tried it in this deck, and holy shit!
Yeah, it's definitely interesting for sure. Okay, so let's talk about the standard ones though first. Between Orange and Jackie's, I guess let's just start with just the general premise of the deck, and then. And then maybe we can start talking about maybe some differences between the two of yours. This is a token druid to begin with, I guess, just starting from some kind of archetype.
Yeah, pretty much. We are both working from the Violet Teacher Power the Wild and engine in like a midrange kind of shell. You see that every card up to like Innervate Ruth's Idol, Power the Wild, Wildgrowth Wrath, like the exact same early game.
Yeah.
We are both playing Wild Teacher, we're both playing Fandral, we're both running Nourish, and Scenarios, which like are all, well, not the Nourish, but like all our cards like really fit this token kind of theme with the Wild Teacher engine, and also Fandral is just like the most amazing card that this they could ever wish for.
awesome.
And then we're kind of doing different things. I'm playing a little bit more of more mid-range minions, like I'm playing the Drakes and Druid of the Claws, whereas Jackie is playing more spells with like some cards I really like Feral Rage,
Force of Nature.
Force of Nature, yeah.
Yep.
That was like the most surprising one to me, but I actually can't wait to try that out myself. And Jackie is also being Double with some of the Old Gods, where I took a little bit of, I saw that and wanted to try it out myself, and I should have been performing. Yep. Way better than I thought it would.
Yeah, I think when I first introduced it, the left one's Jackie's, the middle one is Orange's. I think I might have reversed those.
Yeah.
So you just said Fandral's amazing card. Every time I play Fandral, it's never like the dream for me. So what are very common scenarios for you?
Dude, you just Raven Metal, right?
Like, what are some very common situations for you in Fandral?
It depends on which matchup. Like against aggro decks, I sometimes just play it on turn four, and they have to like screw up their curve to like very desperately try to kill it. I actually had a game where I played Fandral of four. My opponent just played a random minion, and I like in passed, and before I actually got to play a card, he just realized that, oh shit, I'm dead, and conceded. Because he I was like, well,
wow.
And my hand was like,
I mean, the card,
Nourish Raven Idol, Power the Wild, Innervate, something like that. So it was very dead.
It's just crazy.
Just the fact that it did concede.
Yeah. Jackie,
and like against control decks, you just set up insane turns, like late in the game, it's like when you can like Fandral and Raven Idol for value.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like custom Nourish together with it. There are so many powerful things you can do with Fandral in like, and it's such a flexible card, which is what I really like about it.
Jackie, you seem to have a huge opinion about it too. Like, what thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's other than Nuzoth, I think it's the strongest legendary.
Wow.
I think it's just absolutely nuts. Like,
okay.
Play on turn four, if they don't, it's just a win condition, like on its own. Like, they don't kill it. They're just, like, one of my games in the prelims, for example, wasn't on stream, but I played Fandral on turn four. They couldn't kill it, and I innovated out Whisper of the Old God.
That's awesome. Yes.
All the free threes win the game.
Yes.
Like, it's just absolutely great. Like, you can get such insane value out of the card. It's just.
Okay, yeah, that's a dream scenario right there. Turn five, innervate into Wisp of the Old Gods. Holy smokes.
And we're speaking of all these insane things you can do with Fandral, but like how it's most commonly used is like turn five, Phandal Living Roots, or like Phandal Wrath, and it just like puts you so far ahead, like just by doing those little plays with having the potential upside of just like winning a game on its own. I definitely agree with Jackie that it's probably, I actually put it as more powerful than Ensoth, but I might be crazy.
Yeah, and even Nourish is pretty amazing, and that's just like on curve too. That's amazing. That's really, really great. Let's talk about some of the differences again. So you have Rag in yours, orange, and then you have Soul of the Force, actually, Jackie, in yours. So that's even more, I feel like, down the token path, right?
Yeah, I think Soul is one of the best cards against decks.
Mm-hmm.
You can just play it with like you use it with like Innovates and Violet Teacher, or even if you Wisps and they don't carry your Wisps, then Soul of the Forest, you can just get, it's actually surprisingly easy to get very good value out of Soul of the Forest. Like even if you get on three minions, that's already like 6/6 worth of stats just for mana, which is already very powerful. Mm-hmm. And it's actually surprisingly easy to get much more value out of it than that.
Hmm, okay, that's definitely interesting. Yeah, I mean, looking at it a little bit closer, Orange, yours seems a little bit more mid-rangey than Token. Given you don't even have you don't even have Savage Roar in your deck.
That's actually one of the cards I've cut from the deck because I felt like the only card that really benefits of Savage Roar is like Wily Teacher when you get it off with like lots of tokens, and I feel like in those games you usually just win on the back of that, and I feel like there are very few games where I actually need to burst my opponent down, and I just outvalue them because like this deck is just filled with so much value that I can just like grind out every opponent. And there are a lot of cards that are not in the deck that could be in the deck. And my reasoning, like when everyone's like, why is this druid spell not in your deck? Pretty much my answer all the time is like, because you don't need it often enough, and you can always get like, you can search for it with Raven Idols, and I think that Savage Roar is I think that Savage Roar is a perfect example of a card that you don't need that often, but if you really need it, like use your Raven Idols to find it. There are some cards that I actually like got from Raven Idol, and after I've gotten from Raven Idol, I mean like maybe this should actually be in the deck. And one of those cards is Soul of the Forest that you are playing, Yaki. Mm-hmm. That card, like, every time I got in from Raven Idol, I was like, oh, this is a pretty good spot for Soul. It's been amazing.
Another thing about Soul is that with all the like sticky minions like Haunted Creeper and Nerubian Egg out of the game, there are a lot less like sticky boards that are difficult to remove.
That's a good point.
Yeah, just kind of creating a difficult board is definitely a good way of doing it. That's why you have two Wisps of the Old Gods versus, I guess, one from Orange. Noxious, what are your thoughts?
Yeah.
I mean, we'll talk about yours in just one sec.
Never mind my list.
Yeah, we'll get to yours.
I like the way they're both building theirs because I look at their list and I see a lot of the Wild Growths are there, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's fine in Orange's deck. I just don't think it's necessary in the deck that Jackie's running, because like that's one of the few cards that I thought was underperforming as hell in this list. Is the card draw, like the card disadvantage, is just so bad. Yes, you get good, you know, card value overall. If your minions stick, you just auto win and you snowball out of control at any point in the game. It's really crazy, but I find that card disadvantage is just so hard to catch up on with a single Nourish. So I feel like the moment you go for two Nourishes to compensate, then suddenly you want to go Orange's route. So everything kind of started becoming more of a mid-range list, and you want Druid of the Claw in the list. And I feel like the pure token approach doesn't work as well as a mid-range one, maybe, if you're running the Wild Growths. But it's just so crazy to me, like, that Wisp of the Old Gods, a card that everybody was laughing at, has been MVP like in those lists. It's insane this card is right now. Like, I can't even believe it.
I added it yesterday right before I started streaming because I got the prelim deck list and I was really curious about Yaki's list. I saw the double Wisp and I was like, I guess I'll try one out. And it was just like overperforming in every single game I played it, which I didn't take this card seriously at all.
Yeah.
but apparently it's good.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that like the optimal list bit of this is like somewhere in between where me and Jackie are.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
Yeah.
One card I'm really liking is Feral Rage. As you're not running Feral Rage in this, but I love the versatility of it. Like there's so many like 4 health minions, like Frothing Berserker, Totem Golem, that are around at the moment that it really helps you deal with. And
let's mention the heal. Like, the heal's really, nice too.
Against Freeze Mage, you can regain 8 armor. Yep. Like it's really like the card.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It's just like it's a flexible heal bot, like to me. It's a card I've really been liking when I've got enough Raven Idol. What I'm gonna try out like tonight probably is to cut some of the mid range minions in my deck. Probably cut like Rag Emperor and maybe one Druid or a Claw or a Mire Keeper, and add like a Solid Forest, maybe one or two Feral Rages, and try to take it this more spell based approach that you are, because I think that. Basically, I've just been going from a summoning stone list, and I was like, let's cut the summoning stone.
I love that
random mid-range minions. Well, that's how I build decks. So.
Hey, it won a DreamHack on stage once. That summoning stone drew
it.
It did. We were there. But okay, yeah, Feral Rage I played a lot with too. It's so cool because, you know, these type of druid decks have slow starts, right? And against faster decks, the Feral Rage is... It's perfect. It's good against those type of decks, and it's good against control decks, like you said, like a Freeze Mage and things like that. So, you know, it's definitely a really good one. It's a pretty good one to get with Fandral, too. I've gotten it, I think, mostly, actually, with Fandral the times I've played it. So it's a nice bonus that way, too. I think, you know, I haven't actually played that much of the token, even though I talked about it a lot with Noxious. You know, I'm like, Flooding Druid, dude. Flooding Druid, I promise you, will be, like, a thing. Like, it just... eventually.
Well, it had to be a thing, but I feel like even right now, like the deck that Jackie's playing, which is the one without Ragnaros for those who are watching, like even that list, even though you play like a token list, it used to be that you would get on the board with Echoing Ooze and Haunted Creeper and Urban Eggs, you know, on turn 2. Now it's like you wait for turn 4, 5, 6 before you even step on this board, but you're never shaken off of it. And this is why Feral Rage is so important in Standard if you're running it, because you need to get to those turns, and you hardly do so with just Wrath and Swipe. I mean, you might get there, but it's just so difficult.
Yeah, I think that's why Wild Growth works, right? Because you want to get to those turns as quickly as possible, and with Feral, you know, just at least buying you another turn, that's actually pretty cool in a lot of situations. Okay, let's talk about this wild deck here with Shifter Xeris in it, as well as the Addled Grizzlies and Dark Whispers too. You know, wild is a format, guys. We are going to see some wild events too. So, you know, I think this type of archetype could work there too. So Noxious, I saw you playing on stream yesterday. Some talk to us. How did it go? Any kind of interesting things?
Well, interesting things is I expected the deck to be a joke deck when I started playing with it. Like I made it off the cuff initially. It had 2 wild growths. I was playing, you know, kind of a standard token from the old days with creepers and everything. Mm-hmm. And then I realized might as well sprinkle in Yogg-Saron in there, because that's an easy win condition if I fall behind that I can't catch up.
Right.
And Dark Whispers, like it's funny how Dark Whispers with Wisps of the Old Gods suddenly makes the deck make you want to play stuff like Addled Grizzly. Because, I mean, you can get those turn 8s even in Standard where you go, you know, Addled Grizzly with Force of Nature, you get 3/3/3s and a 2/2. That's pretty solid. Mm-hmm. But I find that because you don't have Dark Whispers in Standard, you can't commit to just flooding the board repeatedly.
Right.
Like, when you're playing Standard, you have to, you know, pace your flood. You have to just be cautious about it because you don't have more of it on the back end. Like, Jackie's list, eventually, like, you clear the board twice back-to-back, usually the deck is done. Like you're out of fuel, and so I know for having, you know, played games like this, exactly right. That's where you need it in Standard, but because you have Dark Whispers in that format, you just don't need Soul of the Forest. And like Shifter Xeris is mostly a joke card, but it's actually won me a few games. I treated like a one mana Yogg-Saron. Occasionally, it'll come out and just be the most amazing card possible.
Yeah.
Other times Yogg-Saron. It'll be a one drop. It's just a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't like Wild Growth at all in this list. Not in Standard, at least. I've tried it, and it just it's a spell, but if I play Wild Growth, I want to play Nourish, and if I want to play Nourish, I start cutting some of the mid game, and if I start cutting some of the mid game, then Dark Whispers goes, and if Dark Whispers goes, then the deck has gone to shit, and it's just an entirely different thing.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't like Wild Growth.
Yeah, we you know, we barely even talked about Yogg-Saron. You're just talking about these decks.
Well, he just wins because sometimes you're cleared twice. Your board is dead twice, then that's all you got.
Personally, I think Druid is the best class for Yogg-Saron because you get away with having 90% of your deck spells. Like, you have removal, you have heal, you have minion creation, burst damage. You can literally have everything. Chuck a Yogg in there and it can do wonders.
It's a very natural add. Yeah, that's true.
It's something that Nox just mentioned that I actually haven't thought of was that, and what Druid needs is a combat mechanic. And Jog is probably the best one we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Those of you watching, you should absolutely try this deck. I'll probably be playing it a little bit more, too. I've been playing a lot of just Hunter, which we'll talk about in just a second. But this one seems quite powerful and consistent because, just again, just the baseline without the Yogg is such a strong archetype. It's been a strong archetype in the past, too. So it's not like this is like a new thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I just want to go out and say, like, because, like, I got that a lot when I was streaming with it yesterday. People are like, okay, Orange is going casual. I didn't think anything is
right. Everybody thinks that.
Dude, you're a competitive player. What are you doing? I'm playing competitive Hearthstone.
What are you doing with your life, Orange? What are you doing?
Children's card games, man.
I know.
The future.
No, you can get the Legend with this deck. You can get the Legend with the Hunter deck,
easy.
Too.
I actually did.
Yeah, exactly.
I got Legend with this deck this season.
Exactly.
And I played a Summoning Stone.
You played a Summoning Stone, too. Oh, God. Everybody keeps telling me to play one, but I'm just like... I mean, and this one is a little bit different because you actually have higher mana costed spells in this versus just one and two drops. So, like, I don't feel like Summoning Stone is quite as good when you have just like very, very low costed mana.
I think you would run one Summoning Stone if it wasn't for Fandral being printed. Like, what Summoning Stone does is that it's an extra Wily Teacher. It like helps you flood the board.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But you already have three of those because Fandral actually does the same thing, kind of. But if you didn't have Fandral, you would probably want a third teacher, and Summoning Stone is your best option at that point.
Okay, I see. All right, well, let's talk about Hunter a little bit here. It's a Yogg Hunter. This is the deck I've been running some. I've been changing a few cards here too, but this one's quite different than the Druid because I feel like with the token Druid, it's like a natural addition, like the Yogg. You know, you don't have to actually adjust too much if you're playing that token or that token type of archetype. Where with Hunter, you know, it's always been very difficult to fit all the spells into it. And, you know, people have tried to build lock and load decks in the past, and it just doesn't make sense because you just can't finish, right? Like, because the lock and load play usually is a very defensive play. So the Yogg actually acts as a dynamic. Actually, it's a combination of Yogg and the addition of Call of the Wild. I feel like Call of the Wild giving you some reach at the very end has actually opened up even lock and load for the Hunter, which is really, really cool because a lot of people have been anticipating lock and load eventually being a quite a good draw mechanic for Hunter. So have you guys had any experience with the Hunter at all? I know you guys play a lot of Druid, but anybody tried this one?
I've played a ton of that with Purple.
Sorry, that's like a
what happened there?
Thunderstorm over here. Oh my gosh. Okay. The world's ending over here.
I don't know.
Crap.
What's going on?
Oh man.
But okay, so you played a bunch too, Noxious? What'd you think of this?
Yeah, I played with it I played a deck like it, at least, not the exact same thing with Purple on the Gamers Origin stream. It was actually a really cool like experiment. We had this show. Which was supposed to be once a week, but it isn't these days, where we just, you know, take fun ideas and just climb the ladder with it. And one of the first few ones we did was the Yogg-Saron lock and load. And as it turns out, Call of the Wild is actually pretty busted in that deck specifically. I found that I feel like Hunter's hard to build right now. Even if you have Call of the Wild, it's still not a guarantee that your mid-range is going to win. But in that deck specifically, you often get there because you're controlling the board throughout the entire game. and you're almost guaranteed to get to 8. You might not win, but you're guaranteed to get there. And very often, you know, in combination with just the direct damage spells, the bow, the hero power, it adds up, and you end up just taking games with a Huffer that goes face every time. It's just ridiculous.
Or just putting it in a range where Yogg actually can finish sometimes, sure. You know, like in a weird right. way. But another key thing to this deck is actually just the fact that you only have 3 minions, right? So the King's Elic essentially draws you Emperor or Yogg literally 95% of the time. Like, the only time I lose to it is if I'm playing a C'thun deck or something, and, you know, they get C'thun every once in a while. But you almost always get an Emperor Thor's End, just makes your lock and load ridiculous. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. And then getting Yogg, just guarantee that you have Yogg in hand, is pretty cool.
We were running Blood Mage down those with Power Shots instead of Elic.
What was that, Jackie?
I really like Power Shot.
Yeah,
I was saying at the start, when Whispers of the Old Gods, Hunter was the first thing I went to. I was like, oh, I really want to play mid-range Hunter. So I was trying out a load of different lists and trying to see what would work. Not having a ton of success. And then I tried some Yogg Hunter and suddenly I started winning games. I was like, what's going on? Like, this can't be good.
it must be variants.
Yeah.
Exactly. How about you, Orange?
But I almost feel like Yogg Hunter is better than mid-range Hunter.
I played a lot of both. I mean, mid-range Hunter is pretty darn good right now too. Maybe not the very, very top because of some of the matchups against what everybody's playing, at, you know, in tournaments and things. But definitely going up to Legend, I see a ton of Hunters too, and they're pretty strong right now. It's just the first like one, two, and three, like the turns 1, 2, and 3, they're a little bit weak right now. And I know you added Carrion Grub. You were one of the first to add Carrion Grub, right, Jackie? And figuring out how to get past that. Once you get past that, though, I feel like Hunter's pretty solid.
Orange, the two-slot is the weakest point for Hunter at the moment.
It's like people trying Toad and people trying like all kinds of things.
This week, some people have been... You were playing... Well, I've seen people playing Doomsayer.
Yeah,
and sure. It's been working. I haven't tried it myself yet, but people have been having a lot of success with it.
Yeah.
And I think it's very good. Good choice.
I mean, it's probably the most powerful 2-drop in the game, which is... I could never bear myself to run Doomsayer in my Hunter, but I definitely see why people run it, because the 2-drops are really bad. I've never missed Bad Scientist more than I do right now.
That's true. That's true. Or even like a 3-attack knife juggler. But... Which one?
That's true.
No, man, no.
No, no.
Neither of these should come back.
Yeah.
Ever, period. No matter the state of the class you're playing. If Scientist was a Hunter card, I'm fine with it. You know? Yeah. We can do that.
Okay, we got a deal.
Yeah, they got a deal.
Let's shake hands on this.
That's all I ever wanted.
Yeah.
Okay, that's good then. We're fine. We're perfect.
Yeah, no, you know, the most fun I've had, there's like a couple things that are super fun about this deck that, for one, Lock and Load always draws you cards that you'd never play. So, like, you know, getting a chance to have to play, you know, the, I don't know what it is, like, Infest or, you know, just
Ball of Spiders.
Yeah, Ball of Spiders. You know, it's just like, oh, okay, since I've got it, I've got to play it, right? So, I mean, you get a chance to, you know, experience some of those cards you would never play before. And then on top of that, I feel like every single game with this deck comes down to last turn. It's like, it's always some kind of crazy race. So Yogg actually has like crazy impact on a lot of these games as to how it turns out. So at the very least, this deck is like super fun to play, but you can climb. Like, I've definitely seen people climb to Legend with it. And so your comment about Power Shot too, Jackie, is that I played Power Shot for a lot, like originally, but I just, there are a lot of times where I just couldn't kill anything. Like, maybe it just softens like Shaman stuff and then it's good with Unleash. But generally speaking, I just couldn't.
Weird one, because I think it was actually stronger before Whispers of the Old Gods, where there was more board flooding decks. Now there's like kind of less board flood, and like the aggressive decks like Shaman, they have lots of 3 and 4 health minions, so it's actually kind of difficult to use at the moment. But I think before Whispers of the Old Gods, it was a solid card.
No, yeah,
3 mana consecrate a lot of the time.
Yeah, because normally you wouldn't get that many. Actually, a lot of times you just have 3 minions. You wouldn't even get to 4 or 5. So that's true. Power Shot was essentially a consecrate. But yeah, so try this deck out, guys. This is fun, too.
I mean, this... One last comment about the deck before we close out the topic. You need to try this with a Gladiator's Longbow as a one of. Because I find that, you mentioned, you know, usually it comes out as a race at the very late stages of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much that Glad's Longbow is going to win you the race, is that there's so much stuff you can pick off with it. And, you know, you have two already Eaglehorn bows that people are eating up. Mm-hmm. And the Glad's Longbow really helps you, you know, as you said, soften stuff up in the late game that you can finish off with other spells. And I think if you're running, like, one power shot, one Glad's Longbow, that whole, you know, softening power for a good setup on the following turn is even easier than with running something like Misdirection or, you know, let's say another copy of... I mean, some people run Kill Command in this list, which I have to disagree with, but like Multishell, for instance. You know, there's a lot of stuff that you can argue over, but I feel like really one Glider's Longbow, one power shot has done wonders in this type of deck.
And the nice thing about those, too, like even if you don't include those, it's kind of like what Orange was saying with Raven Idol. You can draw into them with Lock and Load. I mean, you're going to get a good number of cards with Lock and Load. Like I've gotten, you know, I think generally it ranges from like probably four, like I mean, I'm talking about two Lock and Loads, right? 4 to 8 cards. So 4 to 8 Hunter cards, there's a good chance you're going to get one of those cards. And I think definitely there have been times where Gladiator Bow has been pretty essential. But anyways, so this is another Yogg-Saron deck that's actually pretty awesome. The Rogue one's actually pretty good too. I didn't get a great Rogue list that I would say is good, but I've definitely seen Kibler playing the Rogue one. It's actually quite good too.
You just play Miracle Rogue, right? Then you slap on
there's another one.
Up instead of something else, right? Like that's really all it is. Yeah. Again, you're behind. You've had to waste your Auctioneers because they didn't do anything. You had to use your Cold Bloods for removal against Arag.
Yeah,
no problem. You got Yogg in the back pocket. So it's again, you're saving grace in the worst case scenario.
Okay, worst card to get in Yogg, all of you guys. Which one?
Sprint.
Sprint? Oh, dude, I know what mine is. Okay,
Sprint.
Okay, Sprint.
What did
I say? Worst card to get from Yogg, or worst spell to be casted by Yogg. Here's a Sprint. I'll tell you mine. Mine's Astral Communion for sure. I hate that card. That card.
Oh my god!
Wait.
So one thing that actually happened to me more than once is that like. My Yogg cost me like Wizard Old Gods, like Call of the Wild, like lots of tokens, and then I just get Doom.
Doom is brutal too.
I think that's one of the worst things about Yogg. Like you can get a really good spell like Wizard of the Old Gods, and then because you've created a load of minions, all the spells just target your own minions and then just remove your own board again.
Dude, it was so bad. Like I had a Yogg yesterday that summoned with Wizard of the Old Gods. No, it was Stand Against Darkness, the Paladin card that's called 5 recruits, and then he buffed them with Power of the Wild, and then he started Arcane Shotting and Holy Smiting each of them one at a time, and I'm like, are you kidding? Like, what is this waste of time? And then at the end, I don't know, man. It was insane. At least he vanished himself, and I replayed it.
When we're on the subject of good Yoggs, I had a Yogg that my opponent had a 10-10 stealth that win and a concealed log. Concealed Auctioneer and 10-10 Edwin.
Oh my god.
I cast Raven Idol, Aviana, play Aviana, play Innervate into Druid of the Claw in charge form, and Yogg. Yogg gives me Blessing of Might on Druid of the Claw, Blessing of Kings on Druid of the Claw, Sinister Strike to my opponent's face, and Blessed Champion on the Druid of the Claw.
Wow.
And I own Decadent.
That's a finish. That's a finish.
Conceal is so bad, man.
Well, first off, I can't believe you didn't attack with your Druid of the Claw to begin with before you Yogg. I'm taking that chance, but that was worth it, though.
I was really behind.
Yeah.
I was dead the next turn.
That was miracle right there. That's definitely awesome, man. Yeah, when you played enough Yogg, you definitely hope for all those board clearing cards early on, so because then you can like refill it. It's so weird. It's either like things usually reset themselves. Like I'll get damaged by my own Yogg, like whatever I cast, but then I'll get healed
then
by
healed.
It. Yeah, or my board will get cleared and then they'll fill it back up. It's so funny how it works sometimes. But I think the worst thing that's happened to me recently is this is one thing that you should never do with Yogg, guys. Never play Yogg when Sylvanas is on the board. Like your opponent Sylvanas on the board. Never do that because if they take your Yogg at some point in the spell train, they start getting all the benefits of the spell train. So it's like the worst thing ever.
When I saw that the first time, I was like, there is no way this is how it's supposed to work.
Right?
I guess it actually is.
Right.
It's really cool.
No, I would think so. I would think that it shouldn't work that way, given how the queue works with other stuff, but it doesn't. It definitely gives them credit for all those spells, so keep that in mind. Okay, last tech that we have is, we talked a little bit about mid-range hunter. Again, this is like hunter druid day, so
yep.
Let's talk about, let's try to talk about a good mid-range hunter. And this is pretty much what we generally see out there right now. Maybe give or take one or two cards. I'll talk a little bit, call out some cards and maybe we can talk about it. This one has a desert camel in it. And Jackie, you're obviously very, very popular, very famous also for your camel deck at the end of, just pre-standard, which was actually really, really strong too. What do you think about camel right now?
Can I make one note before we start talking about this? Is that this is like a bot to Star Ladder, and the only reason why I play camel in the deck or grub is because I could ban Shaman. I think that grub is better in a ladder setting, but if you can ban Shaman, I think camel is pretty strong in the meta. Go on.
Right. I think that's worst thing about camel right now. Like, you're against Shaman, and you just don't want the camel. Mm. Even though it can be the best card in your deck sometimes, you just don't want it. So, and same with Zoo. Like, you play against Zoo, and you have this part of the deck, and it's just... be a bit of a nightmare because
there's six one drops, yeah.
But they bring out a Void Walker, you bring out a Fiery Bat, and it's just like obviously it's really powerful against control, mm-hmm. but I think I would rather just play the Carrion Grub for the like,
yeah,
yeah. The meta I was expecting to play against was Temple Warrior, Renal Locks, and Rogues, pretty much. That's why, decided to add one camel, but I'm still not like I'm running one for a reason. I'm just not convinced it's correct to run it.
Right. Two drop wise, you've got the Huge Toads, which is, you know, has that kind of beast synergy, but you also have Flame Juggler, and I've actually tried this too. What are your thoughts on Flame Juggler?
I think Flame Juggler is a good two drop. To be fair, we don't really have a lot of options on two.
Right.
If we want to be aggressive, this is what we got to work with. So there's not too much. Like, you can play Double Unleash and two Knife Jugglers in the deck if you want to. I was banning Shaman in this tournament where I brought the deck, so it didn't feel like that was super necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, if you take those out of the equation, you got these as aggressive two drops. You can go the Yagut style and run Doomsayers, which I don't think is a bad idea necessarily.
Yeah.
But this is like the other way to do it. And I don't think that, like, people make a lot of fun out of Flame Juggler and Huge Toad. There are definitely no mad scientists, but in such such an aggressive deck as Hunter, and with the Huge Toad being a beast for the very important Houndmaster, I don't think that they are that bad.
Mm-hmm. Right. Noxious, I know we talked a little bit about this and tracking. You know, I think we talked a little bit about tracking being in the deck, and you like tracking, right, in this deck, and just generally in Hunter. We don't see it very often in mid-range Hunter, so thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's mostly because you don't usually have to tech too much as a Hunter. Like, you just play stuff and people answer. But in this current metagame, like, you have to have weapon removal in your Hunter. You have to have something like Kodo in many spots, because you're not running Owl anymore. You have to have Call of the Wild to finish off the late game. You need to get on board no matter what. And tracking gets you those, you know, tech cards or those on-curve plays that you otherwise just... Well, I say on-curve, but, you know, those plays at least that you can set up. And if you don't have tracking, you're just doomed. Like, I'm sorry. If you don't find a 2-drop in Hunter right now, you're in deep, deep trouble. So, I don't know. I think... even 2 trackings in some lists that I've seen is okay.
The strength with tracking, and the reason I decided to include it, was that a lot of the cards right now you just want to run one of. Like, you really don't want to run 2 Unleash the Hounds, and like 1 Weapon Destruction is fine, 1 Kodo. It just makes your silver bullets, just as you said, Noxious, like a couple of percent more impactful in the deck.
Yeah.
which I like about it. It was actually another Swedish player that introduced me to that idea, and I really, really liked it. I think, like, on the same time as it helps you curve out, it's also, like, that one mana investment, like, early in the game is very relevant when you are curving out. That's why I choose to not include two of them. But still experimenting a little bit with that.
All right, Tundra Rhino. I've been seeing that actually a lot more with people experimenting with Hunter. I think I was watching Mr. Yagut yesterday, too, or maybe late the previous night.
He loves that card.
Yeah, he's been playing that a lot lately.
That card has surprised me a lot. Like, the amount of times my opponent has played it, and I just haven't been able to deal with it. And they play High Main or Call of the Wild.
Call of the Wild, like, wow.
And I'm just like, what? How do I deal with this?
Right. It's it's crazy. It's amazing how it can't be removed. Like, a lot of times it can be removed at five, and pretty cool.
Also, we're talking about how the two drops suck. The five drops in this standard format also just suck.
Hunters are definitely not up there, man.
Yeah, that's why people have been disregarding Hunter quite a lot, and they may be right, but I still got some hope. But there are definitely some huge, just like, fundamental problems with Hunter right now, and the two drop and the five drop slot are huge parts of it.
They added the
welcome to my priest life, my friend.
Oh, gosh.
Welcome to my priest life.
Yeah, exactly. Oh,
welcome on board. Let's have some fun.
I know how it feels now.
No two, three, or five drop. Yeah. The princess, they did add that legendary. It's just, I think right now with so little death rattle, it's like, besides Infested Wolf, I mean, there's not much play. I mean, the whole Savannah High Main, like, playing Princess on Savannah High Main, I've rarely seen people even do that. So, but that is a five drop, right? It's a 6/5 too.
Stranglehold. I tried it out quite a lot, and I think it's a strong card, but if you're playing a standard mid-range Hunter list with, like, just Infested Wolves and High Mains, you're 90% of the time you're just playing it as a vanilla five beast, which isn't bad, but there's other five drops you'd rather play instead.
Yep.
Like, I mean, it's so good.
And even, like, the comparison I make to it, it's most of the time a Strangletorn Tiger.
Yep.
I don't think you get the effect of Princess Uran enough that it's okay to run it over Strangletorn. But then again, I think, like, Rhino or Kodo might even be better than Strangletorn, since the hunters these days are way less reliant on burst damage and play much more of a board control mid-ranger game than before.
Yeah, let's talk about
Kodo.
Let's talk about Kodo too. I mean, Kodo, I think right now we've seen more application of Kodo than we've ever seen, you know, whether it's in Paladin or even just here in Hunter. And it's mostly, at least in events, I see it's mostly because of, like, Doomsayer and obviously Shamans have a ton of targets for Kodo. Do you guys think it's strong enough? I mean, is it literally just because, I mean, is this still too weak? You're just playing it literally just because there's nothing else better to play.
I think it's pretty decent in the meta right now. Doomsayer is the best two drop. A fair amount of Imkang bosses going around, as you said, Totems, Eternal Spirits. Also, like, the big one that, like, I've never lost a game where that happened is Bloodhoof Brave.
Oh, gosh.
Literally every warrior deck is running.
Yeah,
Dream. Yeah, yeah. that Acolyte of Pain, sometimes you snipe a Frothing Berserker with it, but not very often. There are, like, Kodo is definitely better than ever has been. I think if there was of course, if there was a better 5-drop, I would play that. I just don't think that it's, like, it's better than the options we are having right now, but maybe like it's actually just... I went up to playing two Kodos in the... Like, I updated my list today, and I'm now playing two Kodos. The thing that sucks with Kodo is that it's really bad against Rogue. Like, it's pretty much just...
Kills,
like,
nothing.
The worst card imaginable. Yeah, really versus Rogue. Kills Blood Mage Talos.
Yes.
So, like, if you look past that matchup, Kodo puts in a ton of work.
Okay.
Right, and speaking of Rogue, I guess, like, I see the deadly shots in there, and I was actually putting two of those in my mid ranges recently, just because, number one, there's so much Ragnaros running around, and Hunter's Mark at one mana just doesn't feel good anymore, because then you want to run Unleashes, and then you want to run Jugglers, and everything starts kind of warping itself. and those deadly shots have been putting in so much work.
Yes, yeah.
In general, against every single deck in the meta.
I think what made the card good is that these days you have to play longer games with Hunter because of Call of the Wild, and if your games go on average 2 or 3 turns longer, you will eventually need these. I will call it an unconditional removal spell for the big minions. And there's like Stealth Auctioneers in the format, definitely does not make the card worse, but I think that Deadly Shot suddenly got good with this standard rotation because the games go longer with Hunter.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
There are so many decks that just play one minion at a time.
Yes.
Oh, that's true.
Absolutely. You're not going for like a 50-50 or a 1 in 3 chance. It's actually quite easy for them have one.
Absolutely.
Even when you're playing against some of the aggro decks like Shaman, you know, some of the key minions, you know, it's not that bad to Deadly Shot a Totem Golem sometimes, you know what I mean? Like, it's not actually terrible bad, except for maybe
it's
against
Zoo.
It's
pretty good, actually.
Yeah. It's like, it doesn't feel that bad doing it. I feel like you're right, Jackie. Like, there's a lot of decks where it's just, like, playing one Sylvanas or one Tyrion or one, you know, whatever, and it's just, like, super value right now. So that's really, really cool to see. It's been a long time since we've seen Deadly Shot be played in the metagame, so it's really cool. That's why we love Whispers of the Old Gods, seeing a lot of the old cards coming back.
I'm still waiting for my priest to priest list, dude. Like, I've got nothing, like, there's nothing wrong with priests. They're doing just fine, like, in the control matchups, but I just, man, the playstyle is as dry as it's ever been. Like, I can't be a priest right now, dude. It's so fun.
I'm working on a Shadow Form OTK priest.
We've all been trying that.
Look forward to that one.
Of course you are. I did not expect less from you.
Yeah, but how do you survive?
I tried Reno Priest right now, actually. Reno Priest is all right-ish.
Reno Priest, okay.
Not literally, like, yeah, like, it's okay. The only issue is, like, with Light Bomb gone, man, like, I just feel like everything has gone to crap with my priest. Like, I don't even want to run Cabal Shadow Priest anymore. Like, it just doesn't come on time, like when Bloodhoof Brave's on board on 4. So I have to run double pain, and then suddenly my deck becomes a control deck, and then everything just... The wins are just the dullest thing I've ever had with Priest, ever.
Well, it's impossible so to play tempo, because, I mean, unless you play Forbidden Shapings and just come up with, you know, whatever below average card that you're going to be playing at that mana curve. So it's tough to play that kind of deck.
I actually think that Forbidden Shaping was one of the best additions to Dragon Priest that the deck could possibly get.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the power level of Dragon Priest is probably not really quite there.
Talent shows in their power tentacles. Pick one.
I know which one I choose.
Exactly. Me too. Yeah, Priest is tough. Any thoughts on... You guys have ever given any thoughts on the whole Inner Fire thing with Priest, or figuring out something with that? I mean, it's always
Dragon
been
Priest with Inner Fire still works.
Exactly. I wonder if people have been experimenting a little bit with that. I've never played the +2/+6 card at all. Have you guys tried that?
I've played it a lot with Dragonkin Sorcerer, man. It's like you have to play Dragon Priest though. It seems with all these buffs.
I forgot that Inner Fire existed.
Really interesting. Pretty good.
It's not my type of card, I guess.
I mean, if you're going to go with combo, you might as well go with something that's going to be essentially 2 turns versus, you know, like, waiting, like, trying to figure out how to draw through your entire deck as Priest and then going, you know, full out Shadow. That's, like, so much harder to stay alive. Every time I do a Shadow Priest, I just die, like, in the first 4 or 5 turns. It's just like, shoot, man, this wasn't fun.
Deathlord disappearing hurt a lot of decks, but it probably hurt that deck the most. Deathlord was pretty amazing there.
You seen any? Was it Scaling Dragon or whatever it is? The one that doubles though. You guys seen that one?
I haven't tried that card yet.
Yeah, I haven't either.
Have you tried it?
I haven't seen any of it.
A lot of people have been telling me to play a Stealth Cold Blood.
Oh yeah,
play it, stop it, play Cold Blood.
Right.
And suddenly it's got a load of time.
right, exactly. That's like the dream, but hard to pull that one off too. But yeah, Priest. It's no surprise. I mean, I don't know why everybody thought like Priest. If it wasn't for Dragon Priest, literally Priest would be extremely difficult to play. I don't think Horror Shadow Ward or Yeah, Shadow Ward Horror. Have you guys? I mean, that hasn't done much. I barely even play that card at all. I play this.
That card seems like a worse Cabal Shadow Priest to me.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah,
that's exactly. And the thing is, you don't even play Cabal right now.
Yeah, exactly. And as Doctor said, like, yeah. Cabal Shadow Priest has probably never been worse than it is right now.
Yeah.
Priest has probably never been worse than it is right now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I have some friends tell me that the Ensoth Priest is like pretty good, but I've yet to try it out myself.
Very good against.
And I think that one of the. Yeah, exactly. That was the thing. And if I've been reading the meta correctly, Ensoth Paladin is on its way. Like it's getting way less popular than it was a week or so ago. But
yeah, I think people are figuring out how to play against it, and it's definitely the power level of it.
Well, they know what it is. Down.
Yeah, it's just and just what you need to save up and how, you know, what win conditions are. So I think a lot of people are mostly prepared for it. You know, one thing I did see with Priest is that Firebat said he got to Legend super quick with that Control Paladin. I mean, that Control Priest, sorry. The Priest that he was playing. So, like, I was trying that out for a while. I kind of got stalled. I got stalled out, like, at rank 3 or something like that when I was playing it. So, I don't know. He must have found a really nice moment in the meta where it was playing out pretty well. But Control Priest isn't terrible right now. It's definitely not bad. It's just not good enough to even play anywhere near the top of Legend for sure. But we'll have a priest episode really soon. I will have Zaydalot on the show at some point in the near future too, so he'll have some answers to solve for us, I think. But why don't we move on? Wanted to talk about, we'll kind of go backwards now, go back to card crafting guide. So somebody recently released a guide on Reddit that it's just one of, you know, there's been other ones in the past, but it looks like Marty Osage released this one on Reddit yesterday, I believe. And it's one of these guides that answer that question that we've all been asked on stream, which legend. So I don't have, you know, much gold or much money to buy decks, and you know, I'm trying to craft my first legend or maybe a first two legends with, you know, all this dust I have. Like, which legend's going to be the best thing, best legend to craft from a general standpoint? And I guess I just want to pose that question to you guys, and maybe just take a look at this guide and see if there's any kind of, I guess, shifting of some of these cards that you would suggest. Start off with you, Noxus. What do you think? Anything that stands out?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, one of the things that I might not advise for, depending on what you're going to be playing, is Jessikar Trueheart. Because, yeah, she's great in, like, those decks, but those decks are already, like, costly enough to put together. So, I mean, they're right as far as the power level of it. I just don't know that that's something I would craft necessarily. I don't know. I think, overall, Sylvanas and Raggers are the big winners of the expansion, with Karen as well. Like, well, there's very little else to add to the roster.
I feel like these two have always been at the top. Like, when people ask you this question, I feel like everybody's always said Rag or Sylvanas.
Okay.
Do you guys agree with that or no?
I mean, the main thing is the versatility of Ragnaros. The fact that you can play him in aggressive decks as like a top end, but you can also play him in control decks as like a cool. You can put him in any deck.
Yeah, just as any kind of finish, right? It's true, true.
Probably Archmage I would disagree with the most. I just think right now, if you're playing Mage, you don't need him as much. Although people are shifting back towards him nowadays.
Well,
They're trying it again.
So Archmage is in Tier 2, though. So I think it is lower in this list here. So
there are a bunch of cards in Tier 2 I would put as Tier 1.
Oh, really?
I think it's like...
Fandral, right? You guys love
Fandral. Is the big one.
Yeah. How's that tier
Jesus
two?
Christ. That is tier one for sure.
How's Harrison Jones?
Harrison Jones too, right?
Yeah. Harrison Twin Emperor, and I actually think, well, Jogs are on tier one too.
Yogg is down here too. I think I'd agree with those three. Yeah, moving those three up. Let's see some of these here.
I think Leroy can switch room with. I don't think that Zaryl is tier one.
Zaryl is actually.
Legendary.
Well, I mean, it's tier one for Rogue.
If you play Rogue, right? I feel like Zerg is awesome in Rogue.
And some people have been cutting it out of their decks.
Yeah, a lot of people now. It was very good when everyone was playing early control decks, but mm-hmm. people are actually starting to realize that you can be aggressive in this meta too. And in that, if there are just a few percent of decks in the meta that are aggressive, I would much rather play Wild Teacher than Cyril.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so Zeril. Yeah, Leeroy for sure I agree with. Let's see.
Also, I think Gormok can probably be put down to tier two.
Yeah. Gormok?
Yeah, I agree with that too.
What about Elise, guys? You think Elise? Elise and Bran, both of these guys.
If it's interesting, depending on what you play. It's very niche.
If you ask me before the expansion, I would say definitely tier one. Now, not so sure.
That 20 armor is pretty dang good for Bran. Every time I run into that, it sucks,
Thune,
man.
But
it
do
sucks.
You play Cthulhu?
That's right. That's true. That's definitely true. Yeah, I would say it was probably moved down a little bit too. Tier one has to be pretty darn consistent too. Not every deck like Rag, and I mean Sylvanas is not every deck. I mean that's not an aggro deck type of card. But you guys think
she's pretty much
it's like so good in any mid range or control deck.
Yeah,
I don't know. One thing I actually want to having Ragnaros on the top of this list, actually, I'm not a big fan of having Ragnaros be as good in the new meta. I don't like how much impact Ragnaros has
in
on my game.
In tournaments, maybe, man.
Talk about that. What do you mean? What do you mean? Just the RNG aspect of it, or what?
I just don't like cards where you're actually relying on a lot of the time it comes down to you. Hey, I have a 67% chance here to have a good outcome, or I have a 50% chance here to kill this minion. I just don't like when cards with such high impact cards, where a hit or miss can decide a game, have random in its card text. That's why I didn't like Dr. Boom. It's not because of power level, it's because there's effects that's hard to control. Mm-hmm. That have incredibly high impact on some games that can win or lose games.
With that statement though, would that not suggest that you're not a fan of Yogg-Saroth?
That's what I was gonna say too. I'm like, what? What are you saying here?
Yeah. But I mean, one of the things though is
a little bit of a hypocrite here.
if you look at DreamHack, there was a match that Shocky played against Frozen. Where Auctioneer. The Ragnaros had a 50-50 to kill the Auctioneer or not. And if that hadn't happened, I have no clue if Shocky would have taken that series. Because that was literally the coin flip. It was the gauntlet coin flip, it felt like. And that was just, mm-hmm. The difference between who goes through. And it's fine that we have a late game card that has variance in it. But again, the impact of that hit or miss is just beyond insane in many spots.
It happened multiple times, actually, at DreamHack. I remember, I'm not sure if it happened multiple times mm-hmm. in Chalky games, but it definitely happened multiple times where it was trying to shoot a concealed Auctioneer. And this is this is beta all over again, right? we're watching to see what Rag hits and games being determined by it.
The Hunter list you're running, Orange, I dislike the fact that you have to resort to Fiery Bat, Huge Toad, and Flame Juggler. Those three cards in the same deck is so ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's so ridiculous.
Don't forget Animal Companion.
Sure, might as well.
Just say RNG Fiesta right
now. I've jokingly been saying Casino.
Oh, wow. coin a new phrase.
Well, you're laughing, but that's how it feels, man.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
That is how it feels.
Okay, well,
one thing that I would like to see with this list is that we see class legendary at tier S, which is I would like to see a side note that hey, if this is your favorite class, you really want to craft this legendary. For example, if you're ever running if your warrior is your favorite class, Grommash is definitely tier S.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, you will put that in every single warrior deck ever. That's pretty true. Much.
You can say the same.
So like, they're just like a little dot that, like, hey, if you like warrior, craft this card.
Yeah. And Jessica's in that boat too, actually. I mean, it's not class specific, but if you were looking at it from that standpoint, you know, it's like,
but just a note that, like, this card is way better in warrior and priest than in any other class, pretty much.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you're a newer player and you look at this list, it may not be obvious at first that, like, wait, why is Justicar here? Where do I want to play this?
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're a new player and you like going face, then Leroy would be the card.
Leroy.
That's right.
Leroy is definitely Tyrese on my list.
No, definitely. And I think for most folks that are just like very, you know, like budget decks, right? Generally, you do want to just stick to one deck that you're trying to build. That's usually the most efficient way, right? To climb and to gain even more resources to build more decks. So generally speaking, I think that is the right way to approach and, you know, exercise wise. So a guide that did have that split up would be much more useful. And, you know, this guide's obviously just more of a general one. And maybe there are some other ones out there. I don't know. You guys can tweet us if you guys have a guide that's definitely a lot more in-depth or maybe has some filtering too. That'd be really great for a lot of the players just starting out, getting into Hearthstone. There's always a ton of those type of people getting into Hearthstone every day. All right. Well, why don't we go to Q&A, man? We've definitely covered these topics today. Nice and thoroughly. So let's see what we got here. Those of you that want to ask questions, by the way, go ahead and tweet. You can tweet me at ChamMV or ValueTownGG. Maybe one of you guys take a look at chat and see if there are any questions in there that might be interesting, and we'll take some from there. Okay, so we've got a question from... There's one like really early on here. I'm trying to find it. Actually, one from Coach Sunny. Let's see... Do you see Yogg-Saron as a defensive card or also as a good offensive card when you're ahead on the board? Would you ever use Yogg if you're ahead on the board? I don't think I would. I don't think I would ever.
Ideally, you want to use it when you're behind. You have a board. It's quite likely that it's going to... Oh, the spells are going to end up targeting your minions and removing your board. It's a lot better to play when you...
It's something that does come up, like, for example, it came up in a game I was playing yesterday with Jog Wizard. Like, my opponent had no board. He was playing Tempo Mage. Had, like, no board, but had, like, 8 cards in hand or something. Mm-hmm. And my board was a Violet Teacher or something. And my turn, if I did not play Jog, was to Hero Power Pass. And, like, mm-hmm. at that point, I may look ahead, but like at that point, I do consider myself behind enough because like this is gonna swing like if I don't like right, in his favor very quickly if I don't play it. So mm-hmm. I guess those are the only situations where technically ahead where you could play Jog. But if I was like a favorite to win a game, I would not.
Yeah,
like without playing it, I would not play it.
Exactly. Yeah. Like it really, it's all about the. I think it's all about the board, really. Like it comes down to the question: would you play Deathwing, and would prefer not to? If the answer is yes, then Yogg is probably like a much, much better alternative to Deathwing in those spots.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely had situations where I would have almost an empty turn next turn if I didn't, and I just do it just to get resources. Again, it's more utility in that fashion than it is finishing. Okay, Lucas.
It's like if
go ahead. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say if you have a board, if you're ahead, like in a good position, and Yogg is the only card in your hand, it's probably a good idea to not play the Yogg. You don't need to play it. Right. If you don't need to play it, just don't play it because it could backfire.
Yep, that's
a really good comeback mechanic.
When you're ahead, it will backfire. Like, if you don't have to play and then you decide to YOLO and play it, it's almost guaranteed to backfire on you just for
at that point, you're just asking for it.
Yeah, exactly, right? You're doing it definitely for just shits and giggles there. All right, Lucas McKay, why, I guess, do people... why do people, when they see a token in Beast Druid... think it's a bad deck. I'm kind of translating this. generally, why do they think that token and beast druids are pretty different? So maybe we can look at it. We talked about token druids, so I think we concluded that's pretty good. Beast druid, Orange, I think you brought a beast druid to Austin, didn't you?
I think they're talking about the beast druid that is also playing wild with teachers.
Oh, okay, sure.
Because like they want to run part of wild, partly because it's one of your only few good beasts, and like wildly teacher is just like one of the few broken things that druid can do. I have a hard time answering this question because I do not get what he means that why, like, are people looking at that and just thinking it's a bad deck. I don't think it's like that great for ladder. Like, I brought it to DreamHack Austin because I was targeting. I needed something in my lineup to beat the control decks, and the Beast Druid does that really, really well.
Yeah.
So that's why I brought it. It's, I guess people think it's bad because it loses pretty badly to the aggressive decks, because like your minions are mostly like when everything is about trading, your minions are most like 3/2s and like pretty weak when it comes to that. So.
Yeah, agreed.
I guess that is why people don't like the deck, but
yeah, plays
a pretty hard question to answer. Yeah,
I think one of the reasons people might is if you look at the like for my token druid, for example, you look at the lists and you see Whisper of the Old Gods, you see Force of these cards that just look bad. But one of the strongest things about the deck is how the cards combo together.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not you can't look at the card in the vacuum ever in that deck.
That's how I got to know Jackie from the start, was that he was playing his egg druid on ladder when nobody knew. Like I for sure didn't know about Jackie back then.
Yeah,
and I like it, over and over again queued into Jackie that was playing this egg druid and just played the most terrible cards in the game over and over again, and like after a while I just kept. It, like start keeping track of like what my record against him was, and like I think it was like 5-20 like at some point against Egg Druid, and I could not understand how he won a single game with those cards in his deck.
5-20 is a good amount of data.
After a while I just added him and be like, dude, what the fuck?
teach me right. That's funny.
Like, I've been playing a couple of games with this deck. It went like 0-7 or something.
Right,
and
he
just beats me over and over again.
It's about playing very slowly too. That's what people have trouble with. Is they think, oh, I play all these small minions, I want to just drop them on the board as soon as possible. It's actually the exact opposite, which makes it super fun to play if you're into some quirky gameplays.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it's definitely very combo playing. Even just minions on the board, right? So. Lots of times you just see druids just collecting cards like in the first few turns, and then you see some big plays turn 5 and 6 and so on.
I think
one good example would be if you have Living Roots on turn 1, a lot of people would just play it,
right?
But again, control decks, it's a lot better to just save it in your hand and bind it with other stuff later.
Agreed.
Also, one of my new favorite cards to play is actually Raven Idol. The amount of skill that comes into playing Raven Idol, like that card stretches so far in like there are situations when you like people you see like, oh, I have one mana left over, I should probably play Raven Idol. That is wrong a lot of the time. Then it comes to should you pick a spell or a minion? That's also super relevant and something that people I see people screw up a lot of time, and like I think I screw that up a ton too.
Mm-hmm.
And then like when it actually comes to like choosing a spell, like for example, if you sometimes play it on turn one, because you actually play it on turn one quite a lot because you're looking for wild growth, but like on turn one you get say Starfall, Starfire, Soul of the Forest, like how do you know at that point?
Yeah,
like you have to predict how a game is going to play out and which one is going to be most impactful. I don't think that anyone will ever like be able to say that they can play the card Raven Idol perfectly. That is one of the most skill testing cards in Hearthstone, probably ever.
That's an interesting statement, given that like a lot of people would say that there's a lot of randomness involved in it too. But it is the only card that has a double decision. You know, like you literally have to choose what, you know, spell or beast, and then obviously there's a discover mechanism after that. But your point's really good. It's kind of like tracking too. Like when you track on turn one, and I mean, obviously some of the things you're looking for will be pertinent, but there's not a scenario set up for you yet in the game, right? Yeah. Like literally nobody has a board. It's literally the beginning of the game. So it's not as impactful when you play it that early. So that's a really good point, Orange. Really good one. Brett Bellamy from Scotland_GP asks, what other in-game formats would you guys like to see other than casual, ranked, arena, and tavern brawl? Don't we have enough? There's like four of them.
Tournament!
There's like, well, there's wild too. There's standard and wild. Okay, tournament.
I just want a lobby. I just want a tournament lobby. That's all I'm asking for at this point. Like, we've had way too many disconnects of recent memory and even some of the prime events. Like, I can't even anymore. It's too much. Like, it's just gotten to the point of frustration for me.
How does tournament lobby help with that? Like, disconnects? I mean, I don't...
Well, there... No, like, there's no local disconnection. There's a replay system embedded just because you can restart the match from where it was.
Oh, that's what you mean.
Like, there's
okay.
It's an entire thing. Like, it's not one function. But, like, just being able to admin a tournament in the actual interface, like, that would be a good thing.
Reconnect to it.
I don't know. I feel like there's too many little tournament help.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. It would be a lot simpler to admin a tournament, like Swiss, let's say. You admin a Swiss tournament, like we've had score reporting problems at DreamHack. Like people being dishonest, it's frustrating.
Really? I didn't even know. I didn't know that was going on.
With their score reporting.
That is a thing.
And we had some even beyond that, like even beyond just the score reporting, we've had some like really next level dishonesty. Really? And it's just frustrating to think about, man.
No,
it's
that's disappointing.
So
it's kind of disappointing.
You want to tell them about the DreamHack Winter story, Noxious?
No, dude. I in general, score reporting should not happen or rely on the players to screenshot their fucking win.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that should not be a thing.
I agree with that.
That should never fucking happen.
I agree with you 100%.
Anyway, I'm frustrated.
That sucks.
I'm done. The rage is done.
Rightfully so. One thing that I actually want to see that Wreckful has been advocating for a very long time is actually Nostormo Hearthstone. I want to have a game mode.
Speed Hearthstone, dude. I am all over that, man.
That would be fantastic.
15 seconds every turn.
Yes.
I can just play Hunter as much as I want.
That's true. Well, when in doubt, hero power, baby.
I actually think that would be really fun and actually quite skill testing.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. It might even have some like deck building and synergies into it too. Like if you know you're not like super fast at thinking it, you might build a deck that's just really, really linear and easy to play too.
You have to trust your intuition a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Like
how would you do it though?
That I think would be
go ahead.
Be quite interesting is if you could make a deck where you can combine different class cards.
Yes.
Oh God, no!
That should be how like wild is. Like true wild is like no actual class delineations. You get to choose your
chaos.
You get to choose your hero power, and you get to choose whatever card you want. Oh my God, that would be awesome.
A discussion I've been caught up in multiple times is like this thing where like. What cards would be broken if they were in any other class? Like, I think Innervate is the one that comes up the most. But,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
there are a lot of class cards out there that would be, like, totally ridiculous and would break the game in half if they were in any other class than the ones they're in. And this would really test that. And, like, it would be even wilder than wild, this sort of format, but it would be... A ton of fun
the
to figure out.
World. I mean, I could see turn two kills or turn three kills. Like, I can't even. I don't know.
How?
Shadow Bomber, Mind Blast in Hunter in Wild. Like, just I mean, just consider like turn three kills. Just consider.
Yes. That would be pretty crazy. So going back to the whole Nazdormer thing, would you guys want a format that's more like speed chess with the time? You have a time bank. That you work off, or would you want just 15 seconds, like every single turn?
I'd like 25 to 30 seconds at most per turn, like at most. That'd be cool.
I think both are like cool ideas. Mm-hmm. I would personally like to see the 15 second one, you just have to act on intuition in every given turn.
I can't even select it.
Oh, God. No kidding. Forget Raven Idol.
The old Warzone commander, Patron Warrior, good luck.
You can't play Leeroy in that format, man. Not because it's bad, just because you can't play it.
I can't even imagine what would happen if you played Yogg-Saron.
Yeah, exactly. Forget attacking afterwards. You better attack before. That Druid the Claw would never happen, dude. Oh, man. Maybe you could. Actually, you could preemptively do it. Well, you can't preempt
it. It's sometimes super late in the game. You have to decide, like, very early in your turn if you want to play Yogg-Saron or not. Because you have, like... when you use deck tracker, you have like this little count of how many spells you played, and you see that counter being at like 20, and you're like, I have to decide rather quickly if I want to play Jog or not, because otherwise I'm going to run out of time. Especially when something like Spreading Madness happens, where the animation is like super slow.
Oh, that is terrible.
Like in the middle of a Jog turn.
Yes. Yeah. That card needs to speed up.
That card is terrible in more than one way.
Very, very, very true.
Yes, that's true.
Very, very true.
That is true.
Okay. Any other questions here, guys? Let's see. Anything in chat? Anybody want to ask questions in chat? Go ahead and do that. Oh, cooperative mode. Actually, that's a good one too. I would say with game formats. Yeah. I'd honestly like to see PvE. I think Hearthstone right now isn't a very social game. Like, at all, literally. This is the game I play whenever I'm like wanting to just chill and play my, you know, myself or streaming or whatever. But, where comparatively, I'll go and play Overwatch or something like that if I want to play with friends and stuff. And I feel like Hearthstone is capable of doing it. Like, we could just have PVEs, like almost like raid style, where we're just, you know, we're playing our cards instead of, you know, pressing on WoW powers and things like that. I think that would be pretty sweet, you know, to have something that's dedicated towards that. Like the next dungeon, you know, like introduce it in a dungeon. It would totally make sense. And I think it would be a lot of fun.
Maybe that's some way to like evolve the next adventure mode.
Yeah.
You can do things together. I don't know. It sounds like a cool idea.
Yeah. Let's see. Thoughts on Shifter's Error. So we talked about Shifter's Error some.
A little bit, yeah. But basically it's another mini Yogg-Saron in some decks that can afford to sit on a card.
Yeah, I actually crafted it very early when Wizard Old Gods came out because I want to try it out in Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think if, like, Arena Log just had, like, a couple of... Like, if some of the cards that are not there right now would be there, like, say I had, like, a bit fewer options, I don't think the Shifter's Error would be terrible in that deck, but... that could also be one of those cards like that we just don't quite understand yet. I don't know. It's an interesting one for sure. We have never quite seen anything like it.
Yeah, it was definitely one of the cards that I like kind of fascinated me when I first saw it, just because it's, you know, it's unlike Discover, because you can actually take even longer, right, and have more choices than a Discover. But obviously you have to play it in more of a control deck just to give yourself that many choices. My experience playing the card has never been good. Like, I've never... I mean, maybe one out of like 10 times, it's like it ends up working out decently for me. But I usually just end up playing some card that's it's okay, but it's not like game breaking or anything like that.
I got really confused about Shifter's Roost the first time I played it. Like, I played it in Runeterra Lock, and on turn 4, it was a Druid of the Claw, and I was like, oh yeah, I'll just play my Druid of the Claw next turn. Forgetting they were just something completely different.
Yeah, mine turned to Flame Leviathan 2 turns in a row, dude. I was like, what? What happened?
Hey, this card is bug. Oh, wait. Hey, I love picking it from Dark Peddler. I've done that a couple of times.
That's okay, great. Okay, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think the thing that what makes the card the biggest hit against the card is that you cannot plan around it. You cannot often going into a turn you need to have a plan You just cannot plan around Shifter's Error at all.
Yeah, it's like that Yogg-Saron. Yogg-Saron is like, at least you know you're always getting something if you're defensive late game. But Shifter's Error is just an even bigger gimmick.
Yeah. Can you imagine if Shifter's Error changed while I was on the board? That would be wild as crap. Like, not just when you play it. When you actually put it's on the board and you start playing.
That would be silly.
That'd be silly as shit.
Turn into the ancient one.
Yeah, just for a turn, yeah. Though. And then it would turn into a wisp the next turn, and you just get rid of it.
I'm pretty sure
they're going to make a minion like that.
I'm pretty sure they will, too.
Mid-range cost, because... Like, it can't be one mana, dude. Like, it just can't.
Yeah.
A self-recombobulating creature? Good lord. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? You know, one thing I've been doing recently to just messing around with, obviously ranking down with, is Renounce. A Renounce Warlock. Have you guys tried? Like, no, seriously. Have you guys tried one? And, like, what archetype have you tried it with?
Yeah, I was watching...
Oh, you go ahead. No, you hang up first.
Oh my god.
I want...
The romance!
The romance here. Holy crap.
Cap of Pride. I watched Galento play Renounce Aggro Warlock on stream yesterday when I was playing an open tournament. Okay. And, well, I did not understand a single thing that was going on. But I pretty much just wanted to say that I've seen the card being played.
Okay.
Go ahead,
Jackie. I know you've tried.
I've played a ton of Renounce. I've played it loads. Like, when I was first playing it, I was like, okay, so the only neutral cards I put in the deck are kind of defensive cards, so that I have ways of surviving.
Right.
But then I realized that, hang on a sec, I actually want to draw all my reduced cards to get big tempo plays. So I ended up, the neutral cards were just like Acolytes and Azure Drakes and ways of cycling through the deck.
Oh, okay. And that's interesting.
Like, that's the way I played it, yeah.
Arnas, actually Reno, and then I would always coin Renounce turn one. Why would you do that?
Just, like,
why?
Spam the board.
What?
Yeah. No, it's great. Everything is reduced. So if you have Renounce in your starting hand, you keep all your Warlock cards because they're all going to be reduced. And then you just can have insane tempo plays because everything is
true. Okay.
And then you have your cycle to find all of the reduced cards.
This is actually kind of funny because I think Colenta was doing the exact opposite of this.
That's kind of what I was doing.
So I think the idea that Colenta was that he played all early game minions. He played like
that's what I did.
Every single one and two. Now, pretty much, it was like a super, super hyper aggressive deck. And the second he was out of gas, which is very quickly, he just renounced, and like all of a sudden he could get these like high impact cards and go toe to toe with some other class in the late game. Yeah,
that's what a lot of people wanted to do, right?
That's really cool.
That's kind of what I've been doing. I mean, I basically start out with like a zoo archetype with the class cards, and just to get through early game, and then I think of it as transitioning into possibly mid and late. I do have a Nazoth, you know, just Death Rattle for the neutral card, just because that's consistent. You know, that will always be the same, you know, just to kind of transition into the late game. So I have the Sylvanas and the Karens and the Healbots. But that's kind of the premise I was going for. But I ended up just spending all my cards just running the zoo aspect of it. And then it's just like, I don't get, you know, that much of a discount, or it's just like top decking the rest of the way. So it didn't work out that great for me. I might have to try the opposite, the complete opposite, which is kind of what you're doing, Jackie.
Someone is actually mentioning in chat that Colento actually brought this deck to Star Ladder today.
Did he really?
Which I could... Holy apparently. Shit. I mean, I'm just trusting someone in chat, but...
Probably lost
that,
with it.
That's
like,
really
easily.
Cool.
How did he do?
Not
that bad of a deck, though. Like, the concept of it... the variance of it is horrible, but... The concept of getting an entire like array of cards that cost 2/1 less, like that card was either going to be completely broken or completely bad. Like, there was no in between, and as it turns out, so far it's been on the bad side.
I think it's been on the bad side just because maybe people just haven't given it enough time, because you know Orange has been talking about a lot of things that are super difficult, or it's like takes extreme skill. I think Renounce is one of those cards too. Like,
sure.
I think people can work something. You know, maybe it's one of you guys actually on the show right now, but eventually, like, I think it's going to be worked out to a very, very specific type of deck. Not to mention, there's going to be a breakdown as to, like, okay, if I get mage, then it's this. You know, like, I should be playing this, or if it's freaking druid, they go like this. So, I think Renounce might be the card that I think like pushes, you know, just or requires the most skill to play. And maybe can come up with something powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This actually did not occur to me at first, but like, it's something I just realized now slowly throughout the show, that there are some super complicated cards that will take so much time, like probably months, to understand how to use them correctly. That is, like, I never really thought of it that way, but that is super interesting. There are, yeah, like, just after being on this show, it's, I just wanted to try out so many different things right now.
I mean, on one hand, I agree with that. The only problem is when it comes to tournaments, like, those cards, like, solving them might take time, but the sample size you get in a small, like, say, tournament or ramp up to one, like, it's not big enough for all the games to solve that deck to be played. And so sometimes it feels like, if Yogg-Saron is competitive and it's played in tournament events and somebody wins, you know, a massive prize pool off of it, I don't know how I'll feel about that. Like, sure, somebody's done the math, but in that one instance, anything can happen, and it just feels so bad to, like, be consistent, play a pure linear deck all the way through, like, let's say Temple Warrior, and then you lose to Yogg-Saron.
I guess
it reflects pretty badly on the game because people don't really see everything that goes behind something like that,
pretty much.
So yeah, you're totally right, even though, like, but say one of us knows, like, exactly how much thought and preparation it actually went into, like, understanding this deck, understanding this card, stuff like that. That's not what people see. People just see it as you get double Call of the Wild from Yogg-Saron and won a game.
But that's...
So yeah.
I mean, that's messaging. That's messaging, though. That's like almost the role of the caster is to, like, explain that, right, to everybody, and, you know, just know that these guys have put a lot of effort. It's not just for... you know, just to screw around with, not screw around, but you know what I mean?
But the average viewer will probably be like, yeah, these cards are just trying to make the game look good. Lol, this is bullshit and RNG.
Yeah, of course.
I guess. Yeah,
just casual stone, esports, hashtag, Mingli, everything else. And, you know, it's just difficult Twitch chat.
Yeah, I guess. I just, for me, it's just like, you know, if people are actually bringing this to the preliminaries and, like, you know, bringing this to the main tournament, I mean, there's a degree of seriousness, you know, these people have to begin with, instead of just, like, some, I don't know, just some weekend one-off thing that's just kind of fun. This is, but I know what you mean. I just feel like that'd be a shame if something like Renounce, which is, would require such, you know, a large amount of analysis and skill would just be, you know, just kind of thrown to the wayside like that just because of RNG or whatnot. That'd be a shame. Let's see, any other question before maybe one last question, then we'll call it a show. Actually, it's been a nice one. You guys have been a lot of fun, and we've been talking about all kinds of stuff so far, so
this has been quite a crazy
episode. Yeah, it's been nuts.
Jogs Yogg-Saron is brought up in every single conversation we're having.
Dude, this is, I mean, that's Sarge though right now, man. Yogg-Saron's awesome. Okay,
the card is awesome.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay, actually, Sonny HS, he has a question. I guess he's a coach. He's a Hearthstone coach. He says, any advice for a Hearthstone, let's see, any advice for an analyst that wants to break into the scene and work with an organization team that is on a semi-pro level? Well, for one, I think anybody on a semi-pro level is, I mean, I guess for an analyst, just somebody who's just gathering data and things, I guess you don't have to be a pro, but I think it helps to be, you know, a very high level player, even if you're going to be an analyst. So, but if you want to contact the organizations, I mean, I think you have to start off by just trying to email these people, cold emailing them, and that's going to be the best way. You'd be surprised sometimes. You cold email somebody or message them, and they just happen to be looking for somebody like that. You know, that could be just timing sometimes. It's just perfect timing.
I didn't quite get it. Are we talking about casting?
No, we're talking about, like, analyst. I think somebody that's like just a coaching analyst type of thing. Yeah, yeah. I think that's more
okay.
Yeah, semi-procaster. That's probably not quite as it's going to be hard to actually break through.
Yeah, it's not quite
that.
The same.
Yeah, but yeah. So I don't know. You guys have any advice for somebody like that that wants to, you know, help an organization by collecting data and that sort of thing?
I think, like, the cold email is the first thing. Yeah. Like, it's just, I feel like the worst case scenario is that these big organizations at least tend to respond. If they're serious, if they're actually organizations that take their job seriously, then they'll at least respond to you, so you'll have an idea of what's going to happen with your request. But very often, it's also just about showing maybe like some of the work that you might have done, if you've done any like at all. As a coach, it's a bit harder because obviously, you know, the players, you don't have their data when they're playing. You can't give them, you know, a practice plan or whatever that is and schedule. But when it comes to the info you have on the metagame and what you think, that might be like a good way to introduce yourself at least to them.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for the questions. Thanks, everybody, for the questions. You know, I think we should wrap up the show. Actually, before I wrap up the show, I just want to give a shout-out to the patrons. I usually do this midway through the show, but I forgot. But we do have a Patreon for Valuetown if you want to support the show. Patreon.com/Valuetown. And big shout-out to CJ Hines, Shane Sherman, Lucas Capdeville, Jacob Sebastian Fell, Paul Hatchman, Dan Simborski, Eric Cobb, Eric Lynn, and Keith McLaughlin. Just some of the patrons that have been supporting the show for a while. And we kind of choose a few each week just to give a shout out to. So thank you so much, guys, for supporting the show. But let's do some shout outs, guys. Jackie, amazing having you on the show. You know, it's been a fan of your, you know, deck building and just all your creative ideas for a long time now. So just having you be on Valuetown and discuss Yogg with us has been a real pleasure. Any shout outs you want to do?
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been it's been great. Shout out to my team who have been really supportive for me and like kind of have recent in Hearthstone. Okay.
Oh, cutting off again.
you're cutting off a lot right now. Yeah,
there you go. There you go.
I think Your mic threshold might be a bit too low or too high. Yeah, I don't hear anything right now.
Yeah, we don't hear you right now.
Oh.
There you go. Okay,
we can hear you now.
Oh, you hear me now?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, start over. Let's go.
Start over. Oh, I can't remember what I said now. Yeah, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it. Great to chat to you guys.
And he's cutting off again. Okay, I guess we're not gonna do this, dude.
It's not meant to be.
Shoutouts are not meant to be. Happening. All right, Orange, how about you do some shoutouts?
Thanks for having me. This second time on the show, and it's been a lot of fun both times. Mm-hmm. Thanks for everyone that's watching.
Awesome. Okay. All right.
That's it.
Sure.
Follow me on Twitch, Orange_Rage.
Yeah, Twitch. His Twitter's on the overlay too. Definitely follow both of these guys' Twitters.
Twitter too. That works.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta take the opportunities to go full sellout.
Of course. That's, you know, that's what we reserve this portion of the
segment
show
for.
Yeah, exactly. Noxious.
Well, shout out to Complexity as usual for all the constant support, and shout out to Temple Storm for hosting this on their channel, and Chanman, of course, for the work that you put into researching topics that are cool and also making the whole Yoxron thing happen, because that was great. I mean, the deck lists we had were, like, although very similar, very, very cool this time around. We had a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
So props.
Absolutely. And those of you listen... Oh, go ahead.
Should we try with Jackie again?
Yeah, one more time with Jackie. What was the deal in a second?
You hear me now?
There we go. Okay, yeah, come on, Jackie. We've got you like for a few seconds.
Thanks to my team for supporting me. And come watch my stream if you want to see some Yoxron.
Yeah, we're done,
definitely.
Right?
Definitely.
Guys, like, that's it. I'm shutting up. I'm never talking again.
What's your stream? Real quick.
We got it all. Fair times the charm.
Oh, what's your stream, Jackie? Or type it into Twitch chat so everybody can check it out.
Type it on Twitch chat.
Yeah, definitely type it in Twitch. I think that's the best way. I just round things out by thanking all you guys for watching the show today. I know there's Star Ladder and everything else going on, so I really appreciate you guys watching. Obviously, the three of you guys for doing the show with me. For all of the folks listening on audio, we have a lot of people actually listening to the shows on audio and just podcasts. I'll make sure I link all the decks so that you guys can kind of at least try to follow along or maybe look on your phone while you're listening to the podcast, so you can see the decks that we were talking about today. If you guys do listen to it on iTunes or on Google Play or podcasts, and you like the show, please be sure to leave a 5-star review for the show. It helps out quite a bit in terms of people discovering Valuetown on their phones. So we would really appreciate that. And
oh, I I just tried to do the same thing as Jackie did and type my
stream
title in the chat, and I got timed out for 10 minutes.
Oh. Why are you trying to spam stuff? Type it out to me. I'll put it in there. Type it to me inside, and then I'll put it in there. I guess the VODs guys for the show will be on youtube.com/chanmanv shortly after. We got t-shirts too. Be sure to check out the t-shirts for valuetowncrowdmade.com/valuetown. It's a tribute to the I guess our past card, you know, guys or big cards heroes that we've had past, like Dr. Boom. The first one's Dr. Boom, so you can check that out too. That helps also. But that's going to be it, guys, for Value Town this week. We'll be back next week. Hopefully Ray will be back too, so all the folks just, you know, missing all the salt. Hopefully he'll be back. Oh, and actually, no, sorry. I'm wrong. Next week will be an arena episode that we're going to be doing with Crip and probably hopefully Edwakta Merps and those guys too. So I'll give you some info on that. It'll probably be a little bit later too. Until then,
that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, we always do one every once in a while. We haven't done one in a while, so
okay.
Yeah, with it being out, the expansion being out for a few weeks, it might be good for them to do a review. But okay, guys, that's going to be it for Value Town for Jackie Chan, Orange, Noxious, and myself, Chan Man V. We'll see you next time.
Later.